There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right. It's Midday Mobile, hour number two. Glad to have you along. Our live local talk. And I'm going to get our conversation with my buddy Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News in just a second. But thanks for the great text here. Brian and Fairhope, yours stood out. Brian says here, Sean, you obviously are not, quote, a highly trained observer, end quote. Got that right, Brian. He said, if you were, you would have immediately noticed the numerous split-second hesitations in his walk, meaning President Trump, and President Trump taking of the steps, and you would have noticed that his arm waving was meant to hide the heaving of his chest from the strenuous effort of getting up the steps from the helicopter to the White House. These are all minute indications that the president is still extremely ill. Give me a break, writes Brian from Fairhope. Brian, obviously, I don't have that highly trained observer status, nor did I have the flip side. This is why I'm throwing shade on both sides on this. The CNNs and the MSNBCs were, oh, he's heaving, he's not healthy, he can't do this. And then turn around people on the right saying, you see the way you went up those stairs, that shows somebody who's fully recovered and they're fine. Like I said at the end of the last hour, what I saw was the president go up the steps and go in the White House. I obviously don't have that trained eye. But my buddy Todd Stacey, who's worked in Washington, probably does. Did I miss something in that when the president went into the White House?
Well, I couldn't tell. There was a black helicopter over my head, so I really couldn't. I couldn't hear what you were saying. Come on. There's so much. That's what's frustrating sometimes about this relentless 24-hour news cycle. Is you gotta, everything has to mean something.
Yes.
If you're on the left, then it's proof of, you know, a Russian conspiracy. If you're on the right, then it's, you know, well, he's superhuman. I just saw this Instagram where President Trump himself was like, you know, doctors have never seen a body like mine. Yeah, you see that? Yeah. It's like, okay. I mean,
how about he's a 74-year-old dude. He is a president. He's our president. He's a dude, and that dude went up the stairs and went in the White House. so good. He's recovered from COVID, and that's good. But that's not enough. You're right. In a 24-hour news cycle, it can't just be that. It has to mean all these other things that I go, well, I'm just a doofus. My eyes just told me there goes the president in the White House. But what about that? What about, you know, I talked about this some last week on Friday. This idea that you can have that you have to, like, say the president's okay, which it looks like, you know, he's recovering from this, because if he's not, then people won't vote for him. If it was something that would show him to be infirm and not be able to do the next 4 years, that's a different story. But there's people every day getting COVID and they're sick for a few days and they quarantine and they're back at work. They're at everybody's job and friends and family. I mean, this is our new reality. People get COVID, they get better, and they get back with it.
Yeah, I mean, that you're right. And I just can't imagine that would be it, right? If you're, that's what you're going to vote on. He got COVID, and even though he's better, I'm not going to vote for him. And I don't think that's it. I think, you know, what voters will judge him on is his handling of it, his handling of the national, you know, outbreak situation starting in March, also his and the White House's handling of this outbreak of their own, and it has been sloppy. I mean, you just go back to, I mean, we've had several high-profile White House officials now, you know, have a transmission here. We've got mm-hmm. Pentagons and, you know, the top generals at the Pentagon are in quarantine. I mean, it was clearly it got out of hand, and it's not like it's a an issue that's going to doom the election or anything, but I do think people will judge him on how he responds to having contracted COVID, how he talks about it in the future and his own experience. It's actually a tremendous opportunity. If you're like me, you're an optimist, you say, all right, this is a great opportunity to maybe even shift the debate, because now he knows everything about it because he's had it, and he can talk in those terms.
It is absolutely. And it's one where you can start to balance out the seesaw. And the problem is, I know we live in a binary world. You have to be all one way or the other. I'm not. I believe in science. I believe in, you know, trying to figure out how to mitigate what we're dealing with COVID-19. At the same time, I don't think it's something that calls for all-out lockdown and shutdown of the economy. So while it's worth focusing on the worst case stories, and that's what the news does. I mean, that's by the nature of the news. That's, you know, that's what makes news, right? That there's the worst story, people dying, fatality numbers. But the story that doesn't get told is one that I think President Trump can tell, too, of lots of Americans that got COVID, right? And then they got sick, and then they got better, and now they're moving on with their lives. Because that's going to be a reality for there's going to be a lot more folks that is the reality for them or their families than there are in the number of people where it ends up being fatal, which is a tragedy. But there's a lot more people get better than die.
Yeah, and look, the simple reality is this is good news. Not only have we gotten better in terms of we're not transmitting the disease as much, right? We're wearing masks, we're distancing, we've gotten better about transmitting the disease, but the healthcare system has gotten a lot better about treating it. If you just look at the numbers, when people get hospitalized, first of all, the hospitalization numbers are down. So even though transmission rates are still, I think we're averaging about 730 transmissions a day now in Alabama, but hospitalizations are way down. That's really important. But you know, the doctors, the healthcare industry has gotten better. They've learned how to treat this better. So I agree with you that there's a story to tell here. Part of it might be threading the needle. But I think one thing is true about this White House and Donald Trump. If they really hone in on a message and really have a lot of discipline on it, you see this in State of the Union time. Mm-hmm. They can really be effective in drumming it out. The problem comes when they're inconsistent and speaking on two different wavelengths. Like a prime example was Mark Meadows a week ago, or I guess on Friday. You know, here comes the doctor saying, you know, he's okay. We're going to treat him, and he's okay. And here's Mark Meadows, the White House chief of staff, telling reporters off the record, it's actually a lot worse than it is. I mean, that's just. Just bonkers to me. I think it's a great opportunity, but they've got to be disciplined, got to be on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, the messaging, the problem is, can you get away from Trump is superhuman messaging, right? That those on the right, those pundits want to make it all about, he is so strong, strong like ox. No, just say he's a regular man. He's, like other regular folks in this country that have contracted COVID, and they're getting better, and they're your friends and family, and we're going to work our way through this. We need to protect those most vulnerable, but other folks can hopefully avoid catching it. But if they do, the reality for a lot of folks is that they're going to get better. It
Sean,
seems like that's
hire
not
you as the message as the message guy, because to me that's effective.
I don't think anybody
goes for the strong man thing. Maybe somebody does, but I don't think you're not really bringing in voters on that. This election is going to come down to voters in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan.
These are my kind of people. I think I speak their language.
You talk about salt of the earth, kind of folks. I think that's who it is. And a big part is getting his base out. There's no question about it. But I do think there's probably a better way that they could be communicating.
All right. Got a lot to get through here today, and we'll remind folks how they can get this awesome email from you in just a second, and then get in their inbox 6 days a week. I want to talk about one of your stories here about tonight's you call it the Veep debate night. I think that makes it sound too nice. I'm calling it Vice night. So what are we to expect from, usually this is snooze fest, right? Who cares what the vice presidential nominee and the vice president say? But in this case, I think there may be people, I guess, looking to this for more policy debate than the gladiator match that ran last week.
Yeah, it's kind of opposite from 4 years ago. That was a real snooze fest. Nobody cared, between Tim Kaine and Mike Pence. Nobody cared because it was the main event. In this case, I mean, Trump's 74, Biden's 77. Trump has now had COVID. I mean, there's a legit, legitimacy to the idea that this person could be the leader of the free world one day. I'm not saying the president's going to die or anything like that, but whoever gets elected, whoever wins, will be the oldest person ever elected to the office. So it's real. Plus, I mean, I've never seen a higher profile rollout of a vice presidential candidate than Kamala Harris. I mean, it was just a huge ordeal. Another part of that is I don't think she's answered a question from the press since that time. And so she's kind of been in a basement, so to speak. Maybe she's been doing debate prep, and maybe she's going to be really good at that. The one thing I'm really looking for in this debate is whether or not Mike Pence can pin Harris down on law and order, on law enforcement. She has had a very checkered answering. She's had it both ways.
Yes.
Earlier in her career, it was all about law and order. I'm a cop. I'm a prosecutor. I'm an attorney general. I'm cracking down on crime. But as the social justice movement has gotten stronger, she's really backed down on that and tried to have it the other way. So I'm curious if Mike Pence tries to pin her down on that, because I think there could be some hypocrisy exposed.
Absolutely. I still don't know if that changes anybody's vote, but for the blood sport that it is, yes, putting Kamala Harris on the spot and saying, do you believe, you've talked about this in the past, of abolishing the police? And don't even push, just say what, just keep going back, to that, use verbal judo and let her run herself into the wall on this and just ask her that again. And then I would also ask her to, although let's go through some of the things you said about Joe Biden during the primary and have her answer those. So you're signed on with somebody that you say is and go down the list.
Yeah, I think they had some pretty spirited clashes during those Democratic debates. I mean, she called him out on some issues, and I would say she definitely won those contests. That was one of those times where Biden just seemed like he didn't know where he was, because Harris was eating his lunch, really. He didn't want to be there. So, yeah, that could be interesting. Pence is just a pretty steady, consistent guy. I don't think it's going to be easy to rattle him. On the other hand, if I'm Harris, it is absolutely not about Mike Pence. I'm not going after him.
No, it's all Trump.
I don't care. It's all about Trump and all about the administration and all about Trump. And so Harris will be smart just to stick to that script. And because that means Pence has to defend his boss, which is harder to do than just, defending yourself.
Well said. All right, coming right back, more with Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News. And we'll also talk about some of the stories that are in inside Alabama politics this month. Talk a bit about the mask mandate extension here in Alabama. It makes us different than the other southeastern states. When will it end? What's the benchmark for that? We'll talk about that. And this is what I love, so much of what Todd does, but he's done what he calls fun with electoral math. I have a problem with that because it has the word fun and math in the same sentence, but we'll get him to clarify that when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, so 122 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile. 10-year conversation with Todd Stacey. And coming up at about 1:35, Scott Bannon, director of Alabama Marine Resources, joins me. I talked a little bit about this on Monday and Tuesday's show because I reached out to the director about what would happen with this weekend's three-day, the Saturday, Sunday, Monday snapper season that was making up some of that tonnage. Obviously, with a hurricane in the Gulf, it's not going to go off as planned. He'll join us here to talk about what the state's doing about that coming up in just a little over 12 minutes or so. All right, my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. That email I'm always talking about, y'all, he's the man that prepares it. How do they get it?
Oh, it's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. Click subscribe at the very top. Enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. It's a really good time to be signed up with all this politics going on. I mean, less than 4 weeks until the election.
And then, I mean, by the time, you know, we get the votes counted by January, mid-January or so, in that, we'll almost be ready for regular session in Montgomery.
Oh, yeah. I have a feeling it is going to be a little bit of a mess, especially in these swing states. And you still got court rulings and cases that we don't know exactly when the counting starts and stops. So, yeah, it could be a mess.
And I'm worried about that. Just self-serving. I'm supposed to be on top of a mountain in Colorado November 7th. So I really need everything finished up so I can not have to, you know, try to phone the show in from up there. Okay. And another one of your brands out there is Inside Alabama Politics. And it's a monthly look forward to for me. I love this thing. And I digest it very quickly. A couple of the stories that stood out to me. One of them, Will Watley's story here about behind the scenes in Ivy's mask mandate extension. Talk about this. Alabama, this is weird. Usually we're the outlier for other reasons, not because we have the more government control than our neighboring states.
Yeah, and if you look around, we're now the only state that, you know, our surrounding states do not have mask mandates. And so really over the last week or 2 weeks, Tennessee's let theirs expire, Mississippi's mask mandate expired. Georgia and Florida never actually had one. They always did the relying on local municipalities rather than a statewide mandate. So, you know, you sort of saw the dominoes falling. You know, here goes Mississippi, here goes Tennessee. Would Alabama let our mask mandate expire? But we didn't. I mean, Kay Ivey said, no, we're going to keep it going. She and Will Watley, who writes for us, just went and asked several different administration officials. They were off the record, but I mean, or they were on background. They were asked to be anonymous, but it was a good explanation. They were saying, okay, looking at the data, we see that cases are basically stable, not necessarily declining, but they're stable. And so they didn't want to see a spike, especially leading up to Election Day, which I understand. But I do think, you know, it's not been popular with a lot of folks. She's taken some heat from some lawmakers. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth has been pretty vocal about his opposition to it. So, you know, it's one of those things. Yeah, she's going to take some political heat for it, but clearly she believes it's, you know, the right thing for the state, and that's really the story.
Does that also, is there a tell in there whether she's going to run again?
I don't know. I don't think she will, and I've thought that really ever since her inauguration. But certainly, things like this, it might be the wrong idea politically if you've got to get renominated within your own party and all that. But a lot of time left. I think after this election and early next year, I really am going to start asking that question to her and to her political advisors, because if she's not going to run again, then basically we need to start talking about who will run, who's on the bench and who's ready to step up.
All right. Well, I'll be waiting for that, too. That's kind of stuff you'll get when you sign up for Todd's email. And then let's talk about fun. Can't believe I'm saying fun and math in the same sentence. But you had some fun with some electoral math here.
Yeah, and look, I'm one of those nerds. I love to get on 270towin.com and press the states and look at just different electoral outcomes. If you go to just a basic map, though, of what would be likely. You know, a lot of states are already in the Trump column. A lot of states are already in the Biden column. But four states really stand out as being battlegrounds. That's Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona. And a combination, Trump or Biden, are going to have to win a combination of those four states in order to win the presidency. That's really what it comes down to. For Trump, he's got a couple of scenarios. He could win just two of those, Pennsylvania and Michigan, or Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Biden, on the other hand, has to win three of those states. So he's technically got a higher mountain to climb. I would argue, though, that if you look at the recent polling, he's actually leading in those states. So maybe that evens it out a little bit.
But it's just, it's fun to go and look at the different scenarios, and it's smart also because come election night, you know, you're not worried about how, you know, Arkansas is voting. You're counting on the states that matter. It's our paid subscriber service, so sorry, it does cost a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. But if you're into this kind of thing, it might be fun for you to read through.
No, y'all, seriously, I consume it. It's like that, when you're a kid, that Boy's Life magazine for me, it showed up, and I just went through it like 90 to nothing. Same thing here, Inside Alabama Politics. And they can link through to that from the Alabama Daily News website, right?
That's right. We included it in the email today. And what's getting the most reaction, of course, is the scenarios in which there's a tie in the Electoral College, including the almost ridiculous notion that based on, you know, Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution, you could actually have a Trump-Harris administration or a Biden-Pence administration based on how Congress turns out, which is absolutely nuts.
But plausible. It's true, but is it plausible?
It is. I think it's really unlikely that we're going to have a tie in the Electoral College. That's unlikely. But should that happen, it actually becomes not only plausible, but kind of likely that Congress is going to have a hard time because it's the House that votes on the president and it's the Senate that votes on the vice president. And not only in the House, it's not a straight vote. If it was just a straight vote, then the Democrat would win. It's a vote of the state delegations. And right now, Republicans have a majority there, 26 state delegations to Democrats, 23. So now, but what if that changes? What if Florida flips? What if Pennsylvania flips? You could have a completely different result. What if the Senate remains in Republican hands and chooses who it wants? I don't have time to explain it all. That's why I wrote it all out. But there's some crazy scenarios that really make you question. Like, my goodness, they were really coming up with some fun ideas back in the 1780s.
So all the powder and the wigs. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Always a great time. Thanks for being on.
All right, Sean, be good.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, let's you and me, let's do this. 136 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Harry's. Been shaving with them for going on 8 years now. And it's, I told you the trifecta that I love. The convenience, having the blades show up the house so I don't have to remember to go get blades. And, it's like Sunday night at 9:30, you got a big meeting, and you're like, oh, dude, I got no blades. Well, that doesn't happen with Harry's because they'll send you just as many as you use each month. You get them that way. And I love, of course, the fiscal conservative in me loves that they're $2 each. And even now with the new sharper blades I'm fixing to tell you about, still $2 each. And of course, the key to it, the keystone of the whole thing, that great shave you get with it, even better now with the new blades, so sharp that in a study with guys shaving 4 times a week, the guys reported that with Harry's new blades, their 8th shave was as smooth as their first. So price still $2, blades even sharper. Harry's is available wherever you shop. You can get Harry's sharpest blades in the big box, drug, and grocery stores near you. Just head on over to the grooming aisle, and I've had many of you tell me, oh, I see them in the stores. And yeah, they got them there. But if you like to shop online and help support this radio show, Harry's has a great offer for y'all. New customers right now can get a Harry's trial set for just $3 when you use my code SEANS at harrys.com. SEANS. It used to be just Sean, and they're still getting orders from my legacy, but they're Sean S now. So SEANS at harrys.com, including a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and travel cover, all for just $3. Plus, you get the free shipping. Don't forget to use my code SEANS, SEANS at checkout, and give Harry's sharper blades a try, and you will love them. Just like I do. All right, I want to bring on Director of Alabama Marine Resources. There's been a lot of questions. We started talking about this on Monday, some with the 3-day snapper season, Saturday, Sunday, Monday running. At the same time, we happen to have Hurricane Delta running. So Director Scott Bannon's joining us to talk more about that. Thanks for being on.
Thanks for the opportunity to have this discussion, Sean. It should be a good one.
Yeah, okay. So here's a situation, y'all, that, month and a half ago, the state set this three-day season?
We did.
And that was why. Explain kind of how we got to that point.
So when we completed our review of the snapper check landings data for the 2020 season that ended on July 3rd, we knew we had a residual amount of snapper. We generally do. We try and close with enough time not to go over our limit. And so we determined that there was 128,000 pounds remaining, and so that is fish that we want to give to the anglers that like to come fish here in Alabama. So we picked a weekend that it's a federal holiday, and I realize some people don't always get Monday off, but we chose that. It's hunting season's about to kick into full speed ahead. There are a lot of other factors, but for anglers, it's generally a little cooler this time of year. We have had some more mild weather, and kind of an opportunity to have trigger fish, amberjack, and red snapper all together. We have not had that in a while.
So, that's exciting. So, I mean, for
there
people,
were a lot of factors that came into choosing this particular weekend.
Right, and that that last part there, that trifecta, was a big deal. We've talked about that on our outdoor show before many times, that for a lot of us, by the time we fill up the gas tank in the boat and get everybody out there, it'd sure be nice to be able to keep, you know, more than one species.
Than that, yes. Yeah.
So you set this date, and then here we go. Well, you know, Murphy's Law, we're now into the Greek alphabet with our hurricane names. Here comes Hurricane Delta.
Absolutely. So, well, let's back up a little bit to Sally. So we understood, and we do understand, that there was a tremendous amount of damage to marinas. There's not an untouched marina in Alabama. Many of them are destroyed. Gulf Shores and Orange Beach had so many boats put up. You know, they're thrown up into yards. They're sitting on docks. They're sunk. So we understood after Hurricane Sally that we were going to have reduced effort anyway and reduced ability to access the water. So we did understand that. So the way the system works is we're open, and it's based on the number of people that go, and they report and snapper check, and we develop that number. So if participation is low, then we just open up more days. So we anticipated that there was already going to be some reduced participation due to the ability to access the fishery. But there were going to be some people that could access it this week. There are going to be some that would be ready in a month. Some may not be ready for June 1 of next year, and some may never put a boat back in the water. So there was not a clear picture of, hey, let's move this weekend. Well, then comes Delta. So, again, potential for a Category 3 storm to come to the Mobile area, the coast of Alabama. So we chose to just leave it open in the anticipation that storms do what storms do, and it may or may not directly impact Alabama. So at the last forecast I saw, the coastal impacts are look like it's going to be some winds, maybe some rain, some localized flooding. But potentially, Sunday and Monday might be days that people who have the ability would be able to participate in the fishery. And we did not want to take that away from anyone. I realize people are not going to travel from the north part of Alabama through the storms to get here. The governor did issue a mandatory evacuation for tourists, and I mean potentially that could be removed at any day as well because the storm has changed.
Yeah, and Dr. Bill's forecast, yeah, which y'all, by the way, you can check it up online. We have the new posting, but I mean he's at this point talking about maybe west of New Orleans, but that still makes for a rough Gulf.
Absolutely, it'll be rough, and so there is no we're not making people go, you know, we do not want people to go if it is rough. Don't go. We will still have those fish. Those fish are still, they're in the bank. So we're gonna dole them out. If there's some people that go and they report, we will reduce it by that. But we didn't want to take away an opportunity if the weather were to clear up enough and people would go. It's easier for people just not go because the weather's bad. It is not an easy thing if we got to Saturday and the storm went far enough west and north that the weather looks good. We said, well, they could have fished, so let's give them the potential opportunity. There's no change in the numbers. If people don't go, they don't go. We still have 128,000 pounds. So then we look at when do we want to open post Delta. So we were waiting until Monday just to see, you know, what were the impacts. If we took another direct hit, you know, then what do we do? So Monday I will meet, or Tuesday morning really, I will meet with our staff and the Commissioner Chris Blankenship. We'll have a discussion and say, I'm very confident we're going to say there was little to no red snapper fishing. how do we want to move forward? What time period do we want to look at? How do we want to model it to allow people to continue to access these fish? And so there's been the social media storm that, you know, that potentially people go to their deaths because they're going fishing this weekend.
Nobody's requiring anybody to go fishing.
Exactly. And remember, if you don't go catch those fish, they are still there. There's going to be very little effort, no matter. If the weather turns out beautiful, there will still be very little effort. There's going to be more days, and we're going to provide those to you. So look for an announcement, you know, middle of next week about what those days will be. And I in no way, shape, or form encourage anyone to go when the weather is bad. Now, some people routinely fish in 5 to 6 footers. That's what they do. I don't like to do that, and I don't encourage people to do that.
And you're a Coast Guard man, and you don't do it. So, I mean, that's the, nobody's, and we'll get, so you're saying we will get another bite at the apple.
Absolutely.
And sometime next week, just ballpark, would it be something in 2020?
Oh, absolutely. We have to complete this allocation in 2020, so it'll be before December 31st. And there's a couple of different options. You know, again, school's back in session. There's a lot of different pulls on people's time, and we understand that. And so we want to try and maximize the benefit. But potentially we say we're going to open starting on some weekend, and then we don't say that it's going to be open through X weekends. We're just going to tell you once we reach the quota, then we'll announce a closure. So that might be a little easier for people because, again, if the weather is bad for a weekend, don't go. We're still fishing to that 128,000.
Right. When we don't go because of weather, then other people don't go because of weather. Therefore, we don't meet the tonnage, and we have more opportunities.
Absolutely. The fish are still on the table. We still have them.
Okay.
That's the advantage of a state-managed system and the system that we use, which is a fairly real-time system with Snapper Check.
It's based on the tonnage, not on the days.
Correct. It's all about pounds, not about days.
Now, there's a whole another discussion to come up next year, but...
you and I are going to have set aside an entire segment probably for that discussion.
We'll do that. All right, so there you go. Hopefully that answers a lot of the questions out there. Nobody's requiring you to go fishing, and we will have a mid-next week a discussion about when we might get that next bite.
About what we do from here, and we want people to make their own decisions about whether or not they choose to go fishing. We did not want to take that from them, and again, we don't encourage you to go if it exceeds your abilities, your boat's capabilities. So please be safe and make good decisions.
Well said. Director Bannon, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Director Scott Bannon joining us here. So there you go. That may put to rest some of the Facebook chatter out there. I'll tell you right now, this is just what I'm seeing, and maybe it changes by Monday, where Dalton may be sick on Monday. But right now through Sunday, the old Sullivan family boat, nah, I don't want any part of that. Nope. No, thank you. Go bass fishing. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Just thinking about all the hours already in the podcast books for today here at FM Talk 106.5. And a quick reminder, you can get them a la carte by going to fmtalk1065.com. Just click the podcast tab. And better yet, subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify, TuneIn Radio. Hey, wonder when Spotify will start telling us what we can do on our show, Dalton? Think? Because if they got problems, some of those they might have problems with me. I don't know. I'll give them something to have problems with here before the end of the show. Maybe I'll do that, try to get us kicked off Spotify. But listen, whether it's Jeff Poore's great interviews, what a cool interview with Gideon, the author, earlier in the show. You can check that out. Or listen to any of the shows on the weekend, all that. You can even check out Two Guys and Some Change with my buddy Angelo. You can check it out through their page and ours. And speaking of which, Angelo from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry.
Hey, how are you doing today?
We're doing good, man. Two Guys and Some Change Tuesday nights, but people can listen to that at their leisure.
They certainly can. They can go on to mobilebaycoins.com and they can click on the link to the podcast there. I think you can actually get to it through the 106.5 FM website.
That's
well.
Correct.
So,
yep.
Awesome stuff. Yeah, if you can't be listening, you know, 6 to 7 on Tuesday nights. Just download it to your device, download it to your computer, your phone, whatever works, and listen to it when you got some time.
Hey, y'all get my attention on it. I mean, so many times I'm like, well, I didn't know that. And I just like coming into the shop, you know, you've introduced me to a lot of things and educated me about things and really started new interest. You know, I'm a curious dude, and you throw stuff out all the time. I'm like, well, dang. I mean, and y'all can do that because you got a lot of things going on at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry.
Well, we have a lot of different things going on here at the shop. We have a lot of history and a lot of artwork here at the shop. A lot of people don't really realize it or think about it, but when you really start looking at some of these coins we have out here, whether it's the pirate coins we have or those Queen's Beast series, they are beautiful, tiny little pieces of artwork that's done in gold and silver. It's pretty awesome when you really think about it.
It is, and you go through and look at the detail that's put into some of these. It's really amazing. But then you can also serve my utilitarian side. If I'm saying, okay, and you've got me on silver, had me buying silver instead of gold for years and years and years and years, and I can, you know, get those silver coins that have that great artwork on them, but also I'm investing in precious metals.
And that's the cool thing, is you can come in here and just buy those 1 ounce silver rounds, 10 ounce silver bars, whatever it is that floats your boat, you can get that. You can also get those cooler items. You know, if you want utilitarian, you can always pick up an open on knife while you're here. And one thing that's really fun about the selection we have here at the shop is no matter what your mindset, you might come in saying, I just want silver. I just want the most inexpensive silver I can get. Once you start looking at all the stuff that's here, you're probably going to end up picking something else that strikes your fancy, even though you had no idea you wanted and needed that so badly until you walked in the door and saw it.
All right. Let's talk about how to walk in the door and see it in the real world and in the virtual world.
Yeah, we're in Midtown, 2204 Government Street. You can check us out online, mobilebaycoins.com. And you can also see some of this new stuff as it's coming in. Check us out on Facebook and on Instagram.
All right, Angelo, and we'll be tuned in on Tuesday nights.
Sounds awesome.
There we go. Hey, you too. Angelo checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Yeah, this is a had some other stories I want to talk about. Dalton, did you see that remember the story we had of the dude from here that went down to Disney and was holed up on was it Adventure Island or whatever that is? That's not Epstein's thing, right? No, that was I think it's Adventure Island, right? He was the person, Discovery Island, that's it, Discovery Island. They said Mobile Man, who this is from our news partners at KRG, said Mobile Man who broke into Disney World's Discovery Island in April during quarantine was fined. Richard McGuire, 42, was arrested by the Orange County Sheriff's Office after he's found on Disney's Discovery Island. He had already been there for days and planned to camp there for a week when they found him on April 30th. In the 9th District Court in Orange County on September 30th, McGuire, in exchange for a plea of nolo contendere to the offenses of trespassing, was fined only $100 plus court cost. The plea coming after McGuire originally pled not guilty. Even though they read pleaded, I still say pled, even though it's incorrect. Richard stated he was unaware of that, and it looked like a tropical paradise, according to the rest report. I mean, and by the way, his YouTube channel is Southern Pirate Outdoors. By the way, if you want to see his trip there, Escape from Discovery Island, that video is up. Okay, and for $100 to stay on the island, that'd be worth it. No, the thing I was talking to somebody during the break here about this, and they said, you know, with what you're talking about today and with the vice debate coming up tonight, you know, how are we gonna recruit the best from among us to run for the top offices in the land? And somebody the other day had talked about, you know, the voting system where you vote your first choice and your second choice and go through it that way. I had an idea I talked about years ago, and I've talked about it a few times on the show. Just give you the 30-second version of it, and we can visit it again. That's my kidnap van way to pick the president, that you have a basically the Electoral College meets beforehand, and the Electoral College has fanned out across their states and talked to people who put up people for president, right? They put up local people in their community that are solid-minded, good folks, the kind of people you'd want running the show. Then this group meets, kind of like the Electoral College. They go through and they vote, and vote the best of these good people that have no idea their names are in the mix, okay? And they vote the best person. They have dossiers on them and everything, and we get the best person. They're not under control of anybody. They've had no donations. They're just regular Americans. And then that person gets nominated, and maybe nominated vice president as well. And the way I picture it is, that person's out in their front yard working, doing something, mowing, weed eating, something like that. And the van pulls up. Secret Service grabs you and says, you got two choices. You either come with us right now and you're president for the next 4 years, or you go to a federal minimum security prison where you will stay for 4 years. Now, your business will be taken care of, whatever you do. Like, you will be able to return to society, return to your job, not having lost any kind of benefits or, you know, business from this. And then you'll be back to private. But for 4 years, you're either the president of the United States or you're in prison. Nobody has their hooks into them. They become president. But we'll see. It's one of the cockamamie ideas that have floated from year to year to year. All right, out of here. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Talk to y'all tomorrow.